Hello, everybody. Hello, Mael. It's really nice to see you again at our show. Hello, Peter.
Hello, Mael. Hello, Armin. Nice to meet again.
Bonsoir.
Hello, guys. Bonsoir.
Bonsoir, mademoiselle.
Bonsoir, monsieur.
Bonsoir, Herr Kommissar. How are you, Mael? Everything fine?
Yeah, I'm fine. Yes. I spend all my days on the building of my house. Then I'm so tired, but it's nice. It's great.
if you look like this when you're tired, then it's just good.
No, I'm quite prepared, you know.
Ooh, nice. Nice location this time. Nice background, nice stuff there. But we talk about this in a second. Very nice.
Yeah, great.
What have you done? What have you crafted in the house?
In the house, I don't know the words in English, but we had the floors.
Okay, flooring.
Wood and carrels, you know, on the floor and in the bathroom, on the walls.
Nice.
It's long, but it's not cold. It's not too much humid or wet. Mm-hmm. So it's okay. It's nice.
Fine.
So you're going to marry soon?
Huh?
So you're soon going to marry?
Oh, no. I'm married since 4 years.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thanks so much. Yes. And how are you?
Still alive.
Still alive, yes.
One day after the other, you know. I appreciate every morning when I wake up and have another day on this planet. I'm just happy and do the best I possibly can.
Yes.
It's perfect. Yeah, I think a very good way of life.
Yeah. Yeah.
Corona was just replaced with Ukraine.
Yeah.
The virus thing was just replaced with the war in the Ukraine the media.
Yeah.
That's a difference since we met last time.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
hope it will be better for the third interview in a few weeks.
Let's see.
Yeah.
In a few weeks, I might be not in Malta anymore, but we'll see. It's time to move on. And now every country gave up their restrictions. So because I still didn't have these injections, so it was a little problematic for me to travel. But now almost in every country, they stopped this now. So you don't need to even have this stupid PCR test to go somewhere. So it's fine.
Yes. Things are going better with the travels and the borders.
Yeah.
I think it will be nice in a few time.
Yeah, until autumn, until the next virus flu comes around the corner. And then, because even in Austria, they have this mandatory vaccination law only on hold, but they didn't put it away. So they have it on hold just in case, you know, the next flu comes around the corner. And, now we need mandatory vaccination.
Yeah, what I said, it turns out as a kind of flu mandatory vaccination because they say, we don't know what in autumn, in fall, what virus will be around. So I would say, okay, for thousands of years, we have not known what virus will be around.
Before, we never know, no.
Yeah. Are there still restrictions in France? Well,
less and less, but I have to say that I'm not very informed of all this stuff. I just know for concert, for traveling or something, I have to know because I have to know if we can give a concert or if we can go to I don't know, a restaurant in the train, etc. But I think the sanitary pass is over since the 14th, so a few days ago. And it's going to be better from now, I guess.
Mm-hmm. I hope. So, no, fine. Let's hope for the best and expect the worst.
You wear a scarf anyway, no?
You wear what?
A scarf. You wear a scarf anyway because you love Eastern culture and Islam and so on.
Yes, I could have, but I'm not in the religious thing then. It's a cloth for me, but not a religious accessory.
Yeah,
it was just a joke.
Yeah, but I think a veil, it can be very beautiful, a very beautiful accessory.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I have no problem with it.
Mm. Yeah, of course. I have seen pictures of very stylish ladies with scarves and so very beautiful. Yeah,
yeah.
I think when I was in Lebanon, you know, you have sometimes a woman completely veiled and you only see the eyes, and you know then that this Arabic woman with these almond shaped eyes, with these black eyes, and you only see the eyes, and you know, of course, you directly only can look in the eyes, and it's like, it's sometimes was quite intense. So it's, you know, otherwise you would look at the face or whatever, but then you only look at the eyes because it's the only thing you can see. So it's quite interesting.
Back then there were some ads, you know, advertisings of Emirates, and they had the stewardesses with that nice kind of turbans and a kind of scarf and reddish costume. Beautiful, just beautiful. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So Armin looks the women just only in the eyes. He's a real gentleman. We see.
This is the window to the soul. This is what matters.
Yeah. Same here.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. That's why every woman, when she sees you, Peter, eyes up. Here are my eyes. You know.
That's not true.
Piers, what are you drinking? Tea.
A little beer.
Beer. Oh.
I guess a Belgian one. Yes.
Nice Belgian beer. Very good.
Yeah, I think so.
That's very good. I come from Bavaria. You know, we have quite a beer culture, but I think that the Belgian beer is the best beer.
For Oktoberfest?
The Austrian is the best.
Yeah, of course.
I admit, I don't know Austrian beers, but
Austrian?
I'd like to try.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think today it's very simple with Amazon or so. You know, you just
you simply invite her, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Organize
I'm sorry.
A concert.
I'm sorry. I'm too dumb. I didn't get the message.
Oh, drinking beers, no problem. And shoot some arrows.
Yeah, so come
or
over.
Something like this, exactly.
No, I plan to cross Switzerland with in motorbike.
Go in
Austria after and make a little
through the Alps. Nice.
Yes,
but exactly. In summertime, I guess, right?
And you should visit Vienna. The inner city with this, you know, from the old Austrian-Hungarian Empire, there are a lot of wonderful buildings, opera house and Schloss, castle, or how is it called, chalet, Schönbrunn, where the emperor lived. It's like Versailles, just a little smaller.
If you tell me about castles and old stones and old stuff, yes, I can't resist. and beers.
And of course, yeah, cheers.
Of course.
Yeah, so just nice. let us know when you're over here.
How long will this tour be? Your bike tour through the Alps? 1 week, 2 weeks?
What?
How long will this bike tour be through Switzerland?
I don't know yet. I have not made the plan, the map on the map, you know. It's just an idea I have. I have seen so much videos about guys with their motorbike and beautiful roads, beautiful forests and beautiful countries and valleys and all this stuff. And I was like, okay, I need to go there. I need to go in Corsica. I need to go in Turkey. I want to go in Turkey in motorbike. Yeah, so,
nice.
Yeah, it's big walk.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. You see, Mael, how feminist Armin and I are. We are. You are drinking the beer. I'm drinking Coca-Cola. We are old guys sitting at home. You're riding the motorbike. Mm. So we are total feminists.
Maybe I am just a big guy, a biggest guy than you.
maybe.
No, beer is fine.
Yeah, it's fine.
Yeah, but drinking beer is gender neutral, I think.
Really?
But we can bring coffee, so coffee too. Yeah.
Yes, with the little pinky.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh.
When you have tea with the queen, you always drink like this, of course.
In front of the Eiffel Tower with the big hat and.
Yeah, but it was even in Chinese tea ceremony. Usually you hold the cup with two fingers and you can support it with the next finger on, and the rest of the finger is curled in, but the female can put this finger out when drinking.
Oh, yeah.
Even in China, so it's fine.
I thought that in China, they hold the cup with the thing, the thumb ring.
Mael, that little ring on the mug is not the thumb ring. It's for
these cups don't have a ring.
Manchu rings are very big. So I thought that, maybe some ring.
But you can try.
Yeah.
That would be a nice video, maybe, how to get a cup and then to use the thumb
just
ring.
Just to see and read it.
Drink first and then boom. Yeah, makes
exactly.
Sense. We need to develop a thumb ring for tea. Yeah, it's true.
No, you get the mug and it's delivered with a thumb ring. Then you hit the ring, you break the ring. And say,
order the thumb ring. There's a whole mug on it now. I need to cut it away.
That would be a nice clip.
Yeah.
Okay, I think we have we hold something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we have an idea. Great. So, and you prepared really heavily back there, Mael, because last time we asked you what bow you shoot and what arrows you use. And for this time, you prepared everything. Would you mind if you show us, or do you have still your first bow, or what was your first one? What was the second one? How many bows do you have?
Yes. So the only problem, I guess, it's with my camera and the depth I have. Maybe I can show all the bow on the camera, but I can try. My first bow. Is an American longbow.
Wow, looks good. Looks good.
Now, now Peter loves you even more when you shoot an American longbow.
No, I hate her because she switched to the dark side of the voice.
Yes,
I admit it. Mm-hmm. It's a Mohican bow from Canada, from Quebec. It's 35 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
With what's the name?
Dacron.
A string.
Dacron.
Yes, Dacron string with Flemish.
Yeah.
Flemish string in English, I guess. And yes, it's a bow I shot with during maybe 10 years, I guess. Nice.
Okay.
And it was my main bow, and I was just like, it was the only bow I shot, so I was very in the longbow stuff, and with Jean-Marie Coche in France.
Mm-hmm.
It was an archer and bow maker, and he had all he had a philosophy about archery and the technique and the technique of diaphragmatic breathing and. Really? He had a place, and he used to make workshops and building workshops. And yes, it was very interesting. I never met him, and he died in 2012, I guess, or maybe before. But it was here in France when you meet somebody who shot in longbow. With a longbow, all the time they said, "Oh yes, Jean-Marie Coche, he was the master." So it's it's a reference here.
So you picked up your breathing method from him, with your diaphragm breathing. Okay.
Yes, with the books he wrote, and I know some people, some ancient pupils, and it's a kind of transmission, and I learned like this.
Mm-hmm. Well, we talked about before, Armin and me, I think with other guests. Do you think if you don't think about breathing, you can do wrong? I don't think so. I think it happens just naturally that you're making you do it the right way, in my opinion. I don't know.
I don't think so too. I'd like to say that we have to breathe, and if you breathe well, you have a perfect shot, and not exactly. I think some archer can shot well or very well with a stop breathing or with a normal breathing without thinking about it. But I think that it can help to be more regular and to not to hurt the shoulders, the arms. And I think it's something about the chi, you know, it's just a circulation of energy. Yeah. And to me personally, I think I shot better since I practice this breathing system.
Yeah.
If it helps, it's good.
Yes.
The thing is, and we spoke about this, Peter, in every martial art, breathing is one of the basic and fundamental things.
Yeah.
And archery is nothing else than a martial art.
Yeah.
And when you know how to breathe properly, of course it becomes second nature, but first, and none of the adults nowadays breathes properly.
Do they all breathe
in the chest, they don't breathe in the belly.
Yeah, that's true. So, but do you think you would draw a bow while exhaling? I don't think so. Never. I would agree if you think about high precision shooting with a sight.
Mm.
It's the same with a sniper rifle or like that. Mm-hmm. Their breathing is important because you can make a lot of mistakes when you're breathing wrong. But with traditional archery, I don't think so. I think it's important, but I think you do it naturally without thinking about it.
In martial arts, we used to blow during effort. And so it's just like...
Mm-hmm. It's not bad because you get in a rhythm and so on. I agree with that. Or think about boxing, you know, when you're hitting you're exhaling. Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Nobody would have the idea to inhale while.
Yes.
And yet punching. most people inhale while they draw the bow.
And
most
when you
don't tell them how to breathe, most people do.
Maybe I do it too. I don't know. I even don't know.
See?
Yeah, I would have to pick up a bow now and try it.
It's for me. It's important.
I inhale when I draw.
Yeah. See, this is what many do. And then what happens is you get the air in your chest. You get your hands, your shoulders up. So you have so many negative things coming afterwards. That's why for me, breathing is a very important part in everything, and so are in archery.
But in one thing, I would agree anyway, that you get in another kind of state of mind when you control your breathing, like with yoga.
Mm.
When you control your breathing, you calm down, you're more relaxed, you're more, you know, that's true. I would say that's true.
I've never tried it, but I'm wondering if with very strong bow, very strong war bows, we really have to control your breathing.
Mm.
Because of the strength you need, and maybe the fact to shot on the horse, for example. And I don't know, but I suppose there is a reason of this. And I don't know if I think it's like three fingers of Mediterranean of a thumb release. Both are working, so. Yeah. We just have to choose your own way, and maybe correspond to you.
And maybe you're right. When I think about it, the stronger the bow, the less you have to think about it.
Hmm.
I'm sure. Yeah. Because you will do it naturally.
Naturally. It's like when you push a car or something, you know what to do. You don't inhale.
How you breathe, or yeah.
You don't inhale when you You.
Yeah.
So everybody needs to start with a heavy bow and let them breathe properly.
There is a story. I don't know if I read this in Murat Özdemir Murat in a Murat article, I think, in a magazine,
mm-hmm.
about the fact in ancient times it was told that when you shot your arrow, you exhale a kind of a part of your soul in your arrow,
yeah.
And with this soul, mm-hmm. your arrow will be more precise and more efficient. And it's true, it's wrong, I don't mind. So it's just a beautiful mm-hmm. idea, beautiful concept, I think. But and
it doesn't matter, when you believe in it, it will help you. It's like with all medication, you can take this where nothing is in it, but when you believe this tablet will help you with your migraine, mm. you take it and there's nothing in it, only sugar, and your migraine goes away because you believe it and you change mind over matter. Always like
this. Yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. And the other thing with what Mael said is with like Murat's stuff and so on. I think it's helpful if you're teaching students, so you get them in the right status,
in the right mood.
In the right mood. Yeah. Now you don't need a bow, you don't need an arrow. We just breathe. So you get them into the archery stuff. I think it's kind of a ritual thing, maybe especially for teaching. Because think about when you're in a battle, you don't think about breathing. I'm sure you know, you don't. Never.
Once you know how to breathe, of course, it becomes second nature and you will always do it. So that's why you train it, because you train that you are fit for battle, that you don't have to think. You don't think you train your single martial art moves. But of course, in a fight, you don't think about it. Because when you start thinking, it's too late. So of course, you'd never think in a battle in this regard. Yeah. So for what am I doing now? Is my anchor point here? Or what? Of course not.
Yeah. It has to be instinctive and with a lot of training. After that, you don't have to think about it.
But and on the other side, when you breathe properly, you don't exhaust that quickly, I believe. So when you work with your breathing properly and you continue this, then on the battlefield, you don't exhaust yourself that quickly, because you work better with your energy, like you said, with chi.
And there you see it again, a sniper in warfare, you know, with a long range rifle, he's able to think about breathing because he's away from the real battle.
Of course.
Yeah. But the more I think about it, to me, the opposite is kind of logically, because if I raise my bow and draw and inhale, and then I stop breathing and then I release, I do it faster, but I talk slower. To me, it's simultaneously or as like the shot. Because you're building up tension, you're building up, you know, you draw the bow, the curve gets high and high, and then you release. So it's, to me, it's kind of the same when I inhale and draw, and then it's like an explosion.
Mm-hmm.
Not my exhaling, but
I personally shot. I personally would never exhale when I release, because in this moment you collapse.
I don't exhale.
So you did so. You said so. The poof.
Yes, when the shot is gone.
When the arrow is in the target, yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because I'm shooting very fast, so.
No, of course, yeah.
I don't. I don't get, how is it called? Ohnmacht. I don't faint away.
No, it's a sensible subject, because it can appear like something, I don't know, elitist or precious, or yes, I have to breathe and make love with energy and be connected to the world and something. And
yeah.
Maybe it can be kind of mystic, but it can be important too. And personally, I realized that when I shot without totally thinking about my breathing, I was more regular. I was more tension. I had more tensions in the shoulders, and then now it's a kind about rhythm. I made a video a few months ago, maybe one year ago, about rhythm in archery during shooting, and it was interesting to notice that we had a kind of rhythm in the shooting. Yeah. And I had an exercise with counting at each step of the processes.
Yeah.
And it's just an exercise. I suppose when you are in the battlefield or hunting or something, you don't think about it. Yeah. But it was interesting to think about it during the practice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and especially, like I said, I think when you're teaching someone, it's very helpful. I think so. Yeah.
It's of course for training that you know what you're doing in the battlefield or when you're out in the field, of course.
And Mael, interesting enough, because you mentioned now here love and so on. Once I had a friend, she was French, she was a sexologist. I don't know, in France or in Spain you can study kind of like that, I don't know. And she said, don't you see the similarity between archery and sex? I said, what similarity? What?
These people are French.
Typically French. You see the similarity? When she explained it to me, it was clear like mountain water.
Yeah.
Of course, you're building up kind of pressure. You're building up, and then it explodes and the shot.
And you're in this. Oh yeah.
It's if you think about that, it's very similar.
But I hope so. One shot is faster than making love.
Mm.
That's
it depends,
that,
you know.
That would be
Peter is working on that.
I'm working on it. That it would be favorable.
It depends if you practice kudo, because it can be very long.
Exactly.
Yeah. No, not about on the timeline, but
the mechanism. It's always building up, contracting, exploding.
Yeah.
And then the relaxation is hitting, always the same.
Hitting the mark.
Yeah, but it's the same. Even one cell in the body does the same. You know, they build up until they explode and then they relax. So this is a natural. It's life. It's a circle of life.
But archery is not natural. So it has a part of
why this in the last podcast you said everything is natural.
Yeah, but it's not like a sale or like making love or so. It's
when I shoot arrows, I have now this Selchuk bow from Lukasz Nawalny. I shot it today again. It's it's like making love.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah,
and what Mael also said about rhythm is also interesting, because I'm always using my back quiver, and to me the back quiver belongs to the shot, so it's one rhythm. It's mm-hmm. it's very, I don't know. It's like a rhythm, yes. Mm-hmm. And you know, you would get to, I don't know, every 4 seconds one arrow. It would be like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is what you first.
Like Mihai do with a back quiver, or like we Jean-Marie Koch, I guess he shot with a back quiver too. And so for me, back quiver is not logical, because it can be very logical, but it's, I don't know, it's okay with Occidental with Westerner archery, but in some shooting and with small bows, maybe on horseback or something. Yeah, I think the side quiver is more efficient.
But to me, the back quiver is as natural as it can be, because when you release the arrow, you're here and your hand is here. So it's just a short movement to grasp the next arrow. So
yeah, exactly.
Yeah, makes sense. Nothing against it. But I even here, when I teach people, I always, when they know the steps, I always say, then now bring them in a rhythm. It's like dancing, that you always have the same rhythm when you shoot, because this helps you for your muscle memory. When you do, sometimes you raise the bow and then you draw slow and you let go. And next time you raise slow and you draw quickly. Look, always do it in the same pace, in the same rhythm. You get way more out of it. That's why rhythm is very important.
John Schulz, you can find his videos on YouTube. I think there's three or four. It's Howard Hill style shooting, but it's the same. Mm-hmm. He recommended counting the phases of the shot, 1, 2, 3, and so on. And it's like that.
Guys, I have a question about cachet technique.
Mm-hmm.
With this movement, when you shot with this movement with the arm, to me, it's totally illogical.
Bullshit. But it's bullshit.
Why? Okay.
It's a show thing, in my opinion. It doesn't help. No.
I admit I call that the Legolas shot, you know, in the Lord of the Rings. It's like,
thing with Kashai, I don't understand it. This is for me simply show, it's entertainment because it looks fancy, but he doesn't do it. He does it with his last arrow, very pronounced with the arrows before, not so much because he needs to get back the hand to his quiver or to his arrows in your hand. So he needs to come back and draw again.
Petra does it too.
And there are some teachings when you shoot a manchu bow, a very long draw bow, then you have this elbow back there. And when you let go, you don't want to hold it because even the manchu has this kick, then you simply counterbalance the kick of this manchu bow. So there are some things which you might want to do. I still don't do it, even if I shoot a long draw bow, but there are some they tell you to do so.
But, you know, if I have to do some movement to balance my bow's kick.
It's a different shooting. You can't compare an American longbow to a manchu bow. And of course, you use a screwdriver differently than whatever hex nut. It's a different tool and you shoot it differently.
Both are bows.
No, it's just but too different.
Yeah, but
that's why many struggle with the manchu.
Cachet is very efficient with this technique. So I watched a video with his pupils on the horseback, and they were like 1, 2, 3, and 4. This movement was totally part of the thing, but it was not at all natural. It was totally just a part of the shot, but they didn't understand why they did this.
There's one thing to it, but I'm sure it's not because of that. You could prevent a creeping release. You know, when you're doing a back movement on release, so you won't creep forward and release. You take a lot of power from your bow when you're doing the creeping release. Yes. That's the only thing.
This is when you see then bear paw, or when Botnik does his teaching, they always tell you then the hand needs to end up there. And then you see many, they shoot.
That's Olympic style.
But this is Olympic keep you style. Again from creeping, that you bring the hand here, folding it back there. Maybe it has to do with counterbalancing because I shoot from horseback. I don't know.
But elbow doesn't
help. Just
the
wrist. Yeah. For me, it's not necessary, but it's me.
Also, that hill style shooters say, but it's kind of like that, but not like winking to someone. Never stop to draw.
Yeah.
So they say, never stop to draw. Draw back, release, and draw farther. Yeah. So that's also preventing that creep.
Creep.
Yes.
Because then the release stays in kind of explosion, because a counter movement to the to the force of the bow.
For example, in Turkish archery, I noticed that quite often archers are just in a continuous movement, and they just arm, release, but continue the movement, and it's not just stopping the anchor point and shot. It's just tack, something like that. Yes. With a big regularity and big efficiency, but
it gives you more dynamic because you don't want to let the bow rest in the full draw position, especially when you have only a wood bow. It stops, it loses power. When you hold a normal pure wood bow, hold it in full draw for a while, it loses its power because it gets used to this position, the wood. So you want to keep it directly letting go, so you get the maximum. And then, of course, what we do, snap release, that you really, the last moment you snap back, you get even more energy in the bow when you snap the string backwards and let go. So it's simply for efficiency purpose. You don't want to stop. Why would you stop when you the same accurate without stopping?
So the Olympic archers don't need that.
No, of course not. This
they
is
should shoot at 70 meters or 90 meters with very weak bows. I don't know, they have 40, 45 pounds, and they exactly stop here and aim and release. And they hit the mark in 90 meters.
Yes, they aim. You said so. We are instinctive or intuitive or whatever you want to call it, and they aim. That's the difference.
But you said it's about power, not power of the bow.
Yeah, of course. But look what arrows they shoot, little streak needles. We shoot proper arrows with 1,000 grain at the same distance, and then we destroy something. These arrows only fly in a foam target and stick barely in it.
Yeah.
So I think sport archery and traditional archery cannot be compared in this way, or the techniques used.
I just compare it because you said it's you have more power, more force in the bow,
especially when you shoot a composite bow with horn and sinew. These are natural materials. And look at the tennis player. Is a tennis player standing on the line when the other one plays, or is he running back and forth? Because it's easier out of a motion to get in another motion than when you stand. The inertia, this momentum you need when you stand and you start moving, takes you more energy and time than when you already move and change.
Yeah, but
it's the same here. Nothing, you don't want to stop.
But there's nothing wrong with getting to your anchor point and release. Nothing wrong with that. And you don't need that additional power.
You, of course, don't need it, Peter. And the hunters most probably not. But we talk about some different kinds of archery. And in Turkish archery, it was like this. Or in Chinese archery, there is snap release. They even overdrew the bow that the arrow almost went inside the bow to get really the maximum out of this bow. Because the first limitation you have is the maximum draw weight of your bow. And of course, you want to maximize it as good as possible. And of course, a modern Olympic bow with fiberglass limbs doesn't have these problems. You can hold it in full draw and it doesn't lose its power.
I don't talk about holding. I just talk about reaching an anchor point and releasing.
They always reach an anchor point. Otherwise, you're not accurate. They always reach an anchor point, but it's not here. It's here.
Yeah. One thing about Kasai, Mael. You don't forget he's doing this thousands and thousands of times and always the same, you know, the same show. So, you know, you can do some fancy movements when you're doing it over and over again. So it won't, even if it's not a good idea to make this movement, if you're familiar with it, if you practiced it, you know, some singers are able to throw the guitar and play on. It's the same thing.
It surely has a purpose for him, but for me, it's not completely logical. I said there are some styles you see even in Ottoman archery. You see then the paintings and the drawings where the hand is back there. For whatever reason, for me, it doesn't make sense. I want to get my hand as quick as possible to my next arrow.
Yeah. It can be just for the drawing too, because on a picture we can we can certain movements to mark them and
make them look big and strong and so on. Yeah, mighty and
overacting.
Overacting, exactly.
Mm-hmm. Mael, what kind of wood is this bow? Do you know it?
It's not written on it, but I think it's
ash.
No.
Dark for ash.
It's Odam.
What wood is that?
Yes, I have an instrument.
Where does Odam grow?
I don't remember the name in English.
Say it in French.
For the French guys, it's I think it's in Tilleul, but it's Tilo in Spanish. But what is this in the?
We're getting closer.
Spruce? No, it's not.
No.
Spruce, I don't think.
No, I don't remember. But maybe it's just a wrong thing. I don't remember, and it's not written on it.
It's okay. Yeah. It's okay.
I have it since maybe 15 years old, 15 years. So I don't remember. Yeah. So after this one, yes, I have the classical.
Snake bow,
snake.
With leather handle.
Yes, with a leather handle, yeah. I'd like to try the small model.
The 50,
Yes, it can be very interesting, but I never tried. I will try it.
Mm-hmm.
So this bow is perfect, I guess, for people of my family, my friends, when they want just to try and they never shot a bow because it's ambidex screws and it's not very powerful and it's very resilient bow.
Yep.
And you spoke about it. I mean, it's just a very good bow to begin our practice every day.
Yeah. And a very favorable price. Too.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Yes,
and a product of France.
Yes,
of France, exactly.
And when you see the design, it's quite advanced. It's an asymmetrical bow.
Yes, first exactly.
of all. And when you see then even underneath the bump of the limb, which goes forward and then down, so it's a very interesting design bow. So that somebody really thought about it.
I always wondered why they did it like that. It looks very complicated because you could do it.
The handle has simply different angle, but when you follow the curve of the limb, it continues down there. So they simply bring the bottom limb out there to the original line again.
It's very interesting. Yeah,
it's well made. Yeah, this is a really great bow. Yeah, yeah.
It's like the medieval Burgundy bow with this limb, just like a long bow, but inspired by Oriental bow with the limbs with this shape.
Mm-hmm.
Like this Belgium. I think in Belgium they had them too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Flemish bows
Flemish bows. Yeah.
It's a good bow. Mm-hmm. And the last one, the longbow family, it's the one I call the joke bow.
Uh-oh.
it's my very, very, very first bow.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a piece of museum. Maybe you don't see it, but it's all metal bow.
Nice. So, you have one of these metal bows we were talking
aluminum.
About it.
Is it
Duraluminium. Duraluminium. It's a French mark, a French brand, and it has been made in the 30s, I guess, something like this.
Ralph Rambourg told us about this bow. Yeah. Ralph Rambourg told us about this bow.
Yeah. We were talking with him.
It was a bow. I heard it was a bow for the king's shooting. I don't know the word in English, but it's a tradition in the north of France, and you have to shoot a bird. Mm-hmm.
Shoot a bird up there.
Like a kabak, a Turkish kabak, but in a French way. And archer groups practice this since Middle Ages, and in the beginning of the 20th century. They made this bow.
Mm-hmm.
It's made in France, I think so. And I saw one in the Archerie Museum in next to Paris, in France, in the Musée de l'Archerie et du Valois, Crépy en Valois. And it was just this bow, this shitty bow, because it's totally impracticable. And it was just like in the on the wall, and I said, oh, this bow, this toy, why? Why? Mm-hmm.
They always say these are dangerous because they break if they are older. I don't know if it's true.
Yes, maybe, but it's not very powerful, but it's just when you shot it, it's stuck a lot. Course.
It's vibrating.
Yes. And it's a awful sensation. Awful mm-hmm. sensation.
Mm-hmm.
So I have
nice.
It.
It's wow. This. Wow. Now at least wow. someone in real, and it's nice.
Yeah.
Yes. Your plate's not big enough. Yeah, yeah. Get sorted. Take your time. We can listen to a joke of Peter in the meantime. Oh, you're ready already.
Oh, yeah, of course.
So now you change to the dark side, right?
The dark side, yes. After this, after the American semi-longbow, mm-hmm. I bought on a medieval fair, I bought this bow, classical bow, to an English guy, I think. I don't mm-hmm. remember the name of the guy. And I have no information about the bow. So maybe with a minimum...
I would say this one was made in Hungary.
Yeah.
Well, probably. Very probably. Yeah. I think the English guy was just the seller.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Even Beerpo had a kind of a bow like this once. They have these fiberglass bows. Yeah, but yeah. Of course in Hungary you get many of them and they always at this medieval yeah. market.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And wooden part, it was leather and
very massive shears.
Mm.
Yes,
very
exactly.
Heavy
and
shears.
When you should go, like, yeah,
a little bit. Yeah.
But, you know, Kashai's bows are quite the same.
Yeah,
yes,
I know.
Yeah. Exactly.
Very, very the same.
My first horse bow was a Kashai.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God. And I didn't like it because it was shaking, but I didn't know that there are fiberglass bows. They don't do that, you know. And I thought, okay, this is now, I don't like this experience, you know.
Yeah. No, I guess this one is fiberglass and other.
Yeah, of course. It's, yeah.
Wrapped with leather, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But it's nice.
It's still a bow. Yeah, to me, it was the best bow I can find. And then I tried all the bows and mm-hmm. no, it's just a fun toy, but mm-hmm. it's not a good bow, clearly.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I shot with it since a long time, maybe 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
It was fine. But when I was like, okay, maybe I have to try another bow and maybe mm-hmm. a good bow. And I tried not many bows because I don't know personally a lot of archer in my mm-hmm. in my region. I live in the total countryside, and the few clubs the guys shot with classical bows or compound mm-hmm. bows or maybe long bows, but oriental bows are very mm-hmm. very rare. And yeah, with this one I was just like, it was perfect on medieval fairs, and yeah, with all the costume and
exactly.
Okay. It was okay, but
mm-hmm.
I had to try other things. And a few years ago, I have discovered a brand, a Turkish brand that you know. It's Şimşek Bows mm-hmm. From Bursa, next to Istanbul.
Mm-hmm.
And so I have 4 bows from them.
Wow.
So mm-hmm. I can begin with the duet, you know, mm-hmm. the I and the Yildiz bows.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
They are up cremen tatar bow.
Yeah. They look good. They look good.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's plastic. It's a very, very, very simple bow, cheap bow.
This is the snake bow for the Asiatic version.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Perfect. 25 pounds.
Same power.
You can't exactly. First more, yeah.
I need one of these. They look great. And simple,
But it's, you decorate it nicely. Mine looks simply some kind of green color.
So yes, this one, yeah, in black it's okay, but
okay.
I'd like some leather, maybe, mm-hmm. and maybe quite a foam.
Yeah.
No, don't add weight. Mm. Don't add weight.
But this bow is incredible. This is such a fun shooter. It draws nice, it shoots nice. And it does everything a snake bow does, but in an Asiatic way. And yes, the price is, I think, 80, 90 euros or something. Or
really?
Or
really?
Yes, something. I bought both of them in the single time, so I didn't remember. But this one is an Ottoman style bow.
Yeah, 15 pounds.
It's 15 pounds.
15 pounds, but it's awesome. This one in 25 would be the perfect bow.
Yeah.
You can't have them stronger.
No, it's they are from a mold. They are simply injected, molded. So they maybe they make them once stronger, but then they need to make a new mold.
But for archery schools, for Asiatic archery schools, perfect.
Yeah. This one I gave it to a 5 years old little girl. I know, and she was just like, She was in brave, you know. She was Merida.
And the good thing is you can't break this bow even when you overdraw. You know, they have a max draw, but even if you overdraw, nothing happens. It's so cool.
I saw a video about this guy. I don't know where he is. Maybe in Scotland or England. I don't know. He has a Shimshik bow, and he made a video about experiments of extreme situations to break his bow.
This is Mac. This is our tactical archery. He's in America. Mm-hmm. He's a redneck.
It's American.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And he throws the bow from the
top. He throws it and then it's Mac. He let it
one a full week in the snow in the ice. Mm-hmm. So it's just like and the bow was totally
of course.
Mm-hmm. He's a funny guy.
Yes. It was fun, exactly.
Yeah.
After this one, I have this bow. It's the Junior from Shimshik.
Yep.
This one is 25 pounds, I guess. Mm-hmm. It's quite a simple bow, but it was not very expensive. I think from memory, 150 euros, I think, with a leather hand. A kind of
whipping
string around the bow and glued.
Yeah. But this is a fiberglass bow, right? Or what?
Yes,
or is it?
It's kind of resin. I don't know exactly the material they use, but it's a little bow, very efficient, very practical, and very pleasant to shoot because it's very smooth.
Yeah. And for the price, you can't say anything exactly.
Yes. Perfect. I think if you want to discover Turkish archery without thousands of euros, I think this bow is very, very interesting.
Yeah.
And mine is up. My bow.
Yeah.
I shot is this one.
Look at this.
This one is just
pretty.
Wow.
Oh, you made a reinforcement around the arrow pass.
I have a little piece of leather here, and this one is the Sipahi model, the short Sipahi model, but the first version. Shimshik made a new version since. You try it, and it's looked like just perfect. And this one, I have to admit that I ordered this bow after your video, and you tried. I think the Azarak and the hybrid first, but this one I guess it's a perfect size for me. I have it in the hand and it's just perfect. And shorter bows are too short and longer bows are too long. For me, this one is just perfect in my hand.
Yeah,
and really I absolutely love to shoot it, and I never want another kind of bow. This model.
Yeah. I understand.
Looks good.
Fully understand. For me, just the handles are always a little too small. So they then when you shoot them for an hour, then my hand starts hurting because I don't know how to hold this small bow. So
but if you make
a something around it, of course.
Maybe I have smaller hands.
I like the Tatar version more, the Chagan. This is even for me because it draws a little longer and it's I'm more a Tatar guy.
Yes, the Tatar is very beautiful, but for me it's very cultural too, and I like Turkish and Persian history. And for me it's kind of Seljuk period or all this stuff and the very beginning of Ottoman Empire, before they became the the big invaders, you know. But it's just like this region of the world, you know, with the music and with all the this stuff I practice and I like. And it's a very, very nice bow, and I love it very much.
Very good.
So Shimshik bows, if you want to.
They are great. They really, and what they do, they provide you with a lot of information when you buy a bow from there, and they have excellent customer service.
Yeah, exactly.
What you don't get everywhere. Sometimes you get a bow, you know, you order a bow and then you get them in a sleeve and nothing with it. You buy something $2 from AliExpress and you get a big documentation with it. And you buy a $400 bow and you get a sleeve around it and a string. And then, you know, what is it now? You know, what's the technical spec sheet or something? Print something, put it in the box, you know. This is what I miss a little from many of these Asiatic bow builders. There is some do it when you see Lukas Navalny, you get the warranty card, at least you know then what is the max draw and what is a grain per pound. Now finally they write it that you don't get too lightweight arrows or whatever, that you really max the bow's performance out. And or the from Grosje, you get a warranty card. There's, you know, a few do it, but for many, you simply get them the bow, and you, sometimes you don't even know which bow is which, and because nothing is written on it, I don't like.
In Carlton Points, you can see that if you contact them from Facebook, for example, you can chat with Bahatin Manush, who is the guy who speak about with people abroad about the bows, and he is always here to answer every question you have, and he has a big transparency and a big culture about archery. And you can find on their websites all the technical specifications about the bows, all the pressure, the tests, the resistance tests, the curves, all the stuff. Maybe for each bow they can print some sheets and put them in the package.
Naya, still, you know, even if you have a different poundage, I don't need the draw curve then, but at least what is the length? What is the string length, as example? You know, just in case my string breaks, snaps or whatever, and I need a new string. Now I need to measure how long is the string that I can reorder it. Because they tell you for which bow, for the shorty pie, how long is the string, whatever. And you check simply, string length, this, that you know these data, and what is the minimum grain per pound, where you should not go under, what is the max draw, what is the poundage as max draw. This is what I don't understand with long draw bows. They still use the Western standard and tell you the poundage at 28 inches. Nobody cares when the bow does 32 inches. I don't care what the bow has as 28. I want to know what the bow has as 32. These are things that many can improve.
Yes, I think, but it's also because they are kind of standard bows and not custom made. Because if you say you need 50 pounds at 32, you will get it also. No.
Yes, but you need to know. Or you, when you order a 50 pound, then they send, then they get you 50 pound at 28 inches. You know, the miss problems can happen. That's why you have a bow. The max draw is 33 inches, and I want a bow which has then 50 pounds is 33. You tell me then what it has on 28, but I don't care. So that's why Alibo at least writes then, okay, this bow has 35 pound at 28 and had 45 pound at 32. Then you know both of them, so that then you're covered.
But if my draw is 32, I'm not interested. What is the draw weight?
But it's simply the Western standard. So at least you know, okay, this would be a 35 pound bow compared to in Western standards measured. That's fine.
On talking about this paperwork, with most of the American bows, you get one sheet of paper with the data you say.
It's fine.
Because on the other hand, I sometimes had bows there where it was a little overdone. If they sent too much, then it's a kind of, you know, business thing, kind of marketing thing, and you get a lot of documentation.
When leaflets and here a leaflet, and there. I know what you mean.
You can overdo it. Yeah. And on a good bow, also the string length, the bow length is written on, I'd say.
Yes. Yeah. But of course, then is when you participate in historical stuff, then you are not allowed to have writings on your bow. That's why it's always a thing, you know, what should you do and what not.
Yes. But for example, that this bow, there is a lot of information written.
Everything is on.
Under the varnish, so it can move.
Exactly.
You know the characteristics.
With all the American bows and also fine. Canadian, it's like that.
Yeah. I'm happy with that. Mm-hmm. So now we switch to thumb rings. I see you with your...
Yes, thumb rings. I have a little collection, but for example, I have these rings, very awful colors and stuff, but it was just to test the size of my thumb. Yeah. And I didn't find a ring who fit me. Yeah. And this one is too big, this one too big too. And it's just, I think, plastic or something.
Yeah.
I bought two vermil archery rings, but just impossible. I like the shape.
But you know what I did? I also couldn't find most were too big for my thumb. And so I took a piece of suit leather and you know I sanded it down on the edges so it was very smooth on the edges, and I glued it inside, and then they fit perfect and they don't slip or so.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yeah.
But after that I tried from Shimshek soft leather some rings. It's okay for a short time, but I guess it. Well, I shot only bare thumb for years because it was just like, I think it's more sensitive to feel the string and like my instruments when I play. I want to feel the strings in my hand, and it's just interesting. But naked thumb was too much painful, even with a 35 or 40 pound bows.
When you shoot a lot, it gets painful.
Yes. When you shoot a lot, it because you have just some,
of course,
some injuries, and you cannot shoot for a week, and it's just too much frustrating. Mm-hmm. So I have this Otsubekir ring, and this one is very, very, very interesting. It fits perfectly, so I was just like,
and you don't feel it anymore. It's on it and you don't feel it. It's like you have nothing on it.
It's great. Quite big, but it's leather, and we have the little
exactly. Part so ring. your skin is protected. It's fine. So, great ring. Yeah, I like it.
Very, like very green. And quite rigid and quite
not too hard, but they're still rigid enough. Exactly. Nice. I have it too.
Okay, for the thumb rings, arrows, I have just a little collection, a little part, but really wooden arrows, because I shot carbon with judo with a judo tip for stamp shooting, you know. In French we used to say be a bud. I learned this word from Jean-Marie Coche books, because it was something he used to do in the woods, in the forest, and to me it's very interesting because I love to work in the forest, in the wild, and I have a lot of forest and a lot of wild around of my home. But I have a lot of stones too. There is stone everywhere. And then when you shoot, if you miss the stump or the branch or something, you break your arrows or you lost them.
You know, these judo points are quite expensive, as I know. I use them too. And a good alternative is a pistol cartridge casing. You know, mm-hmm. if you use how are they 5/16
mm-hmm.
diameter mm-hmm. arrows, you have to find out it's about, I don't know, 7 millimeters.
Mm-hmm.
So a 7/65 casing will work. Or if you're using that 11/32s, a 9 millimeter or 38 special casing works. If you talk to, you know, gun shooters, they have a lot of empty casings. They cost nothing. And if you think they are too lightweight for the arrow, we put it in some lead, you know, from the fishermen. You can buy mm-hmm. some boxes of exactly. lead and you can put it in so they're a little more heavy. They cost nothing. And the other alternative we used were rubber plants mm-hmm. with stump shooting
yeah.
because mm-hmm. they are also expensive enough, but they don't break the arrow. The arrow bounces away if it's in hard target or so. Yes, and stump shooting, we did it a lot. You don't need any 3D animals. You don't need nothing. You think, yeah. Oh, look at that. Look, the nice rotten stump, and you mm-hmm. shoot at it. It's very nice, yeah.
Yep.
Yes. But judo is fine because the arrow didn't go under the grass.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And the little strips are not very practical in the quiver, for example.
Yeah. They get tangled up, yeah.
I don't have it at hand. I had another kind of patent. Mm. And if you use carbon arrows with screw-in points, with usual target points, if you taking a wing nut, you know, a wing nut.
Yeah. Okay.
And you put the wings forwards, mm-hmm. so you have the point, and mm-hmm. here's the wing nut, and the wings stand forward, and you screw them with the point. So the point is quite heavier, but it doesn't matter with stump shooting, I think. Yeah. And it's very inexpensive, you know, and you have these two blades, kind of wings. They stop the arrow like
yes, the judo points. That's a good idea.
Almost like judo.
The judo points are most favorable on a meadow, on mm-hmm. a lawn, because they can slip
mm-hmm.
under the grass. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, but then you broke too many carbon arrows, or was, that's why you swapped them, or when you did judo?
Yeah, it happens, but not too much.
Okay.
And are you making your own arrows? I think so.
Yes, exactly. I have the stuff. And since the beginning of my practice of archery, I was learned to make my own arrows.
Mm-hmm.
It was very interesting because I like to craft things.
Mm-hmm.
And arrows is... I'd like to learn how to make a bow, for example, mm-hmm. A bow, a composite bow, or with traditional methods and other stuff. But it's quite complicated, and it takes a lot of time. But the arrows, I think it's quite easy to do. Yeah. It's less expensive, and you can personalize your arrows. For example, this one are just. Blunt mm-hmm. arrows with a flu feathers,
mm-hmm.
plastic knock, and just it's classical wooden but tainted with a nut oil, kind of nut oil, you know,
mm-hmm.
And it gives a very quite dark color, and I liked it, but I need to varnish them or just put something on it, but because if it's raining,
you have to seal them. You have to seal them, yeah.
Yes, or wax or something.
Yeah. So are you very picky with your wooden arrows on spine and shaft weight and so on?
No, not very precisely. To me, it's quite polemic because to me, a good archer has to be efficient with every arrow he can find.
Mm-hmm.
But I totally agree that if you have the good arrow with the good pounds, the good shaft,
the good stuff,
it's way more efficient. It's totally true.
Mm-hmm.
But
and you know, if you're using nicely matched arrows, and use them, of course, you will be able to pick up another arrow and will be efficient too, because you say a good archer has to be able to do it. Of course, you can do it, but if you're matching your arrows, you're more precise, of course.
Yes, but my problem is that I'm too much sad when I broke an arrow, a beautiful arrow, it's too sad. So when I made my own arrows, I'm like, okay, I made this one, it's broken, I can make another exactly the same. Mm-hmm. But yes, for sure, I think I have to learn all the stuff, all the mathematics stuff.
Mm-hmm. It's very simple.
Or
you can make all the specificity of the mm-hmm. arrows.
It's not mm-hmm. difficult.
Yes, those one are very old arrows, but I used to make the same when I break five or six arrows. I bought the stuff to make another series.
Mm-hmm.
Quite of medieval technique, but well, it's just a compromise with plastic knock, but
yep.
a compromise between medieval arrows and modern arrows.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So it's my current arrows.
Yeah, don't worry. I was once, we have in Medina, in the old capital city here in Malta, there is every year a medieval fest, a weekend. And then all these reenactment groups, of course, offer their archery. And of course, because I know them all, I go there and you see them then with their English longbows and they shoot aluminum arrows in bright blue. I said, look, guys, you reenact here. You give the people the experience of shooting bow and arrow like it was in medieval times. Did you have aluminum in this time? So no, but you know, wood arrows break so quickly. He said, yeah, and they get crooked. And but you know, at least keep it, you know. Yeah. That's why don't worry about the plastic nook, you know.
And what kind of shaft material you use with wooden arrows?
I think it's pine mm-hmm. shafts, okay. but classical regular shafts.
Mm-hmm.
I bought them in a shop I know.
Yeah,
not too far from.
Try from if they supply cedars from you know Port Orford from Oregon, these are the best wooden shafts in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Still the best wooden shafts.
Yeah,
I have to try other things and maybe more expensive stuff too because, when you practice without too much risks, it's nice to have very good arrows and.
Mm-hmm.
And you know. You're doing a lot of work in making these arrows and if you're using not the best shaft material, you know, it's maybe it's €1 more or so and you're doing the same, a lot of work to the shaft with the fletching. And so I think it's worth to try really good wooden shafts.
Mm.
And the more expensive in most cases, if these are these Port Orford cedars, they are quite spined, so they are better than, you know, this. They're just by diameter, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
There's one from Shimshek. I think it's a guy who made them for them.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know the wood, but it's very, very light.
Mm, spruce.
It's kind of, spruce, you know, maybe. Mm-hmm. And I wanted... wooden knock. Maybe here.
Mm-hmm. Here we see.
They look beautiful, very shiny, very beautiful.
Yeah. Yes, it's simple arrows, but very pleasant to shoot and solid. So I shot them maybe in stones or something, and they just bounce. Mm-hmm. And maybe just it's a better wood than my other, and they are more resistant. So it's very, very nice to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
And with a wooden knock, I can shoot in medieval fires and stuff without have to say, no, don't look at my plastic knocks. I'm ashamed.
Mm-hmm. Which fletching jig do you use for fletching or do you make it by hand?
Oh, it's Turkey, I think.
Okay.
The fletching, yeah. It's because you go in the shop. And I have these arrows. Oh, I made these arrows. They are not for shooting, but they are just for presenting to people, medieval, classical medieval arrows. Yep. And
Look at this. Mm-hmm.
Botkineros.
Particular tips.
Nice. Yep.
Medieval and forged and crafted tips.
Yeah, pretty.
On the wall like this. Mm-hmm. And yes, it's very heavy tips.
Yep.
I don't think so. It will be very resistant if I want to shoot them, but it's just to show to people, like this. This one is for chainmail. This one is for
flaming arrows.
Yeah, flaming. Yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know the words in English, but to add something and some stuff. This one is for armors, for with this little leaf form, leaf shape.
Mm-hmm.
And this one is just for kaboom them all. Yeah, very heavy and very
You could try and shoot them in a hay bale. Yeah, then they don't break.
Yeah,
but everything else will destroy them. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty. And you have horn inserts in the nox.
It's not horn. It's other wood.
Okay, it's a hardwood. Okay.
Mm-hmm. It's a French guy I know who made the shafts.
Mm-hmm.
I bought them in a medieval fair.
Yeah.
And the string is linen. I think it's Turkish. Turkey feather too. Yes, but it's not very very medieval. But I didn't have other feathers.
Goose.
Yeah, goose exactly. But I don't have goose next to my home, and I needed these arrows to shoot the goose. And
yeah.
But it's a vicious circle,
Nice.
And the guy who owned the goose had a rifle, so.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Don't do it.
Okay. Yeah. And there's shafts are barreled, larger in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
But Mael, talk to the guy with the geese, and when he kills one, when he slaughters one, he should give you the wings.
Mm. Yes, but I think we just need a very few feathers. Yeah. On the tip of the wings, and we need a lot of goose.
Mm-hmm. No, you can use all the wing feathers. I did this with turkey feathers. It works. It's nice. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. And it can be beautiful.
Mm-hmm. And the advantage of the goose feathers was they are more oily.
Yeah.
In rain, in moist weather, they are more resistant to moisture. Yeah.
Yes.
Good. You can see that oil mark. It's called the oil mark in the feather. You can see it.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Nice. And finally, my last arrows are from a friend of mine. You know, we have the French group Asiatic Archery.
Yes.
Le groupe francophone.
Mm-hmm.
And we have a guy from Brittany, Fred Champagne. Who is making very, very, very good arrows. So
what a waste of his family name. It's called Champagne.
Champagne. Perfect French name.
This should make champagne, not
wine. Footed. this look nice. Footed shaft, no?
Yeah.
Yes. It's just to me it's a kind of Rolls Royce on arrows. It's just an insert with the insert part here, cocobolo wood and epicea spruce.
Maybe
spruce wood. Yeah.
Like
with salvaged turkey feathers and little
cresting,
decoration. And a knock horn. Those arrows are very beautiful, very pleasant to shoot, very precise, very light, very solid. But I don't know why I broke one of them in a medieval target in what's the word? I don't speak English so much. classical target, just mm-hmm. no problem. But I think it was a little problem. Or mm-hmm. I think it was when I tried a more powerful bow, and I think the arrows were not made for such a powerful bow.
Where did the arrow break? At which part?
Just here.
Mm.
Yeah,
where the splice meets, where the splice yes. meets. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
exactly. At the
was too powerful, yeah.
Maybe this arrow had a little problem here. Maybe yeah. it was fragilized when I shot them with a 55 biocomposite bow I tried.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, it was just a problem like this. And Fred Champagne told me, yeah, it can be fixed and no problem. You mm-hmm. just have to send me the arrow and I can mm-hmm. fix it. No problem. Mm-hmm. So it's a very beautiful bow, but mm-hmm. I had them since maybe during 1 year, 1 full year mm-hmm. without shooting them, because I was just like, no, they are in my quiver mm-hmm. on the wall. Mm-hmm. It was mm-hmm. beautiful, but I don't want to.
Yeah.
Take the risk.
mm-hmm. But they are made for shooting. Come on, Mael.
Yeah.
What?
They are made for shooting.
Yes, exactly. Come on, exactly. Yeah.
Do you have a price of them? How much is one, or how much are six? Or
One arrow is 33 euros.
33 euros. Okay.
Yes. So it's quite expensive when you want a full quiver. But I think it's resistant, and we can send them to the maker to mm-hmm. fix them if you need it. So I think it's a good compromise. And in France, there is another guy, Viking Archery, who makes very, very good arrows too.
Mm-hmm.
And I met him in the Archery Museum in next to Paris in October, I guess. And he was able to make more arrows because it's his job, and he has more stuff, a little cheaper. Mm-hmm. And I think they are very, very, very good arrows too. Mm-hmm. And you can personalize the cresting, the stuff, and the different parts.
Mm-hmm.
Nice. So it's always interesting to know some maker who can make very beautiful and efficient arrows, mm-hmm. because my own stuff, there's one are fine, but they are not very, there's one, if I broke one, okay, never mind.
Mael, maybe if you really like good arrows and they shouldn't be expensive, really try some of Howard Hill Archery in the United States. They are custom made. You can choose everything you want. Whoa. And one dozen is $120. One dozen. Mm. So that's not a lot. And they're exactly spined. They're exactly checked for weight and so on. Maybe these are not so expensive and really first class arrows.
Mm.
Yes,
not just Howard Hill, also this Pod Orford and these professional American arrow makers, they make them to the point. You know, they mm-hmm. are exactly matched.
Yes. But you have the same price in shipping that with the arrows itself, no?
Customs.
Yeah,
maybe, but anyway, a dozen would be more favorable than 30 euros for one arrow.
Yeah, but it's collection stuff. I think it's very
Just for shooting, I mean. Mm.
That's just for the wall. Mm.
One thing I also like to say, I don't like to, lecture you, but because of these dark feathers, I also have arrows with these natural paired turkey feathers, and they're just beautiful. The other ones are bright, yes, I see. Because it's very hard for your brain to learn the shooting when you use dark fletching, of course, because you can see the arrow.
Yep.
But you know it. I see the other arrows have bright feathers.
Yes. Oh, and for my arrows, with the plastic nox, I have the little
index.
Yeah. And so when I put them, I'm just like, okay, with my cock feather, and I put them like this. But with a lot of arrows, I never mind, because in my practice of archery, I don't watch the arrow. I just release blinded, and
you don't have to.
It's not
necessary.
Yeah, yeah. If that wrong side knocking makes a difference in hitting the target, then you're then you're a very good shot. You have a very small target.
I didn't notice a big difference.
No, it doesn't make a difference.
So yeah,
in Asiatic archery, when you shoot a longbow with a shelf and something, then it's different again. Then with some, the cock feather needs to be out. I had once a bow from a German bow builder, but I forgot his name now, and he made the shelf extra that you put the cock feather towards the inside of the bow, and the other two were pointing outwards. So it's always,
you know, with that hill styles, with this very dry shelf, it doesn't matter if you cock it the wrong way. Yeah.
Yeah. It matters when you shoot an Olympic bow with an arrow rest and with this small stuff, and then
and
you shoot vanes, when you shoot plastic vanes, then it makes feathers, then it doesn't matter.
True.
And when you put the feathers on it, which tool do you use? A fletching chip?
I have a metallic stuff. Yes. There's one are just bought like this in the shop. Mm-hmm. They are already cut.
Okay.
But there's one, for example, I just made a little with a cardboard, pattern, and I just cut just like this.
But then
to put them
on the arrow,
it's glued.
But you have some tool for it where you put the arrow in with clamps.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. A fletching tool. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. A fletching tool. Yeah. Yeah, it's useful, and so I can calculate the angle of the
exactly
feather on the shaft.
Okay, very well done.
Mm-hmm. A professional Fletcher.
So another question, Fletcher. Of course, exactly, guys, because here is an archery channel. When did you shoot your last arrow? Oh, it's getting silent here. It's an archery channel, guys. Okay. Yeah, so, both of you. When did you shoot your last arrow?
My last arrow, a few months, because with winter, mud everywhere, rain, the building of the house,
a lot of arguments.
Peter,
to me, for me, it's the same. I'm a lazy archer.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, you have to because you're making your videos. So think about it. If you
I shot today without making the video. 3 hours ago, I shot some arrows.
Really?
Yeah. Without doing a video. In the morning, I did a video.
You played strip archery with your girlfriend or so. If I can hit something, you remove one piece of clothing.
I shoot too good for it. No girl wants to play this game with me anymore, because
they all went home naked. But could be a nice game, no? Strip archery.
You never played it.
The female has to, or as you know, intersexual, like you wanted. The female has to say, hit this or hit that, and if the archer is able to hit it, she removes one part of her clothing.
It's a philosophy.
Nice game, I think.
I think Armin, you used to make your videos very early in the morning. No?
Yes, always. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I don't like to stand in the sun, because then the light is very harsh. And with a phone camera, the colors don't look nice anymore. In the morning, I still can use the shade from the house. When the sun is behind the house, then it looks a bit more natural. I like it more.
Well, in the morning, he's younger.
No, I look, you know, when you have a face like me, you have all day long to unfold, you know.
Yeah, on the video, it's not very, very handsome. But
sorry, I know.
Yeah, for you, I want to say, because it's difficult in Malta, you have too much sun in February, you know.
Yeah.
I want to have sun.
Yes, you know, there go planes every day to Malta.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I have to come and make the turn with motorbike and archery stuff.
Yeah, and music, you take it from instruments.
Yeah,
and
yes,
music.
Exactly.
Yeah, of course.
And about archery, I have the last part of my stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yes, now you talk about quivers, yes.
Yeah, the bow quiver for the Shimshek bow.
Yep.
Looks right. Very nice.
Yeah. And it's well crafted.
Wow, looks good.
Yeah. It's made by Oleg Flerko, a guy from
Bulgaria, I think. No?
Oh, where does he live?
Oleg, where do you come from?
Oleg, yeah, Oleg.
I only know Loleg and Poleg, but it's different.
No.
Bulgaria, Romania.
No. It's ancient communist country, but I don't remember. It's not Ukraine. It's not Bosnia. It's not.
Okay.
What is it? I don't remember. Sorry,
Serbia.
Oleg. I'm very. But Oleg Flerko, his channel is AC Leather, and he makes a wonderful stuff. I was just like, I saw all the pics on Instagram and Facebook, and I was just like, wow, it's funny. It's wonderful. It's very well crafted, and all the pictures are very beautiful, and it looks very, very solid, very resistant, very practical. And I was just like, okay, I want one, but it should be very expensive. And so I was just like, no, archery is too much important in my life. Okay, I need one. And I ordered this bow quiver, this arrow quiver.
Nice, yeah.
Wow.
This one with the Ottoman part here and
looks
all the stuff inside. And
the pouch, yeah,
of
course.
Yeah,
wow. The full set, yeah.
Very stylish, very stylish.
And I have to say that I wanted one model. I was like, I saw on his website, oh, okay, this one is very beautiful. And he was like, he watched all my own pictures, and he said, oh, yeah, you played music and you have some instrument. Mm-hmm. And you know this...
He made
this picture here
from your wood, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep, exactly.
Wow, very nice.
He can make this, and I was like, yeah, perfect. It's a link between my archery stuff and my musical stuff, and it's just perfect for me. And with this wood, I play Turkish music, so my archery stuff is Turkish.
Perfect.
One thing I like to ask, I don't know you both, to me it looks very unnatural to carry the bow with the string down. I don't know, just for me.
With the string down, oh yeah.
I would, in any case, I would have it the other side around if I would use some quiver like that. I don't know, because I'm afraid that the string gets wrapped, or I don't know.
Oh yeah.
Or it's more fragile, you know, you're slipping over something and the string is down there, not on the over.
It's for horse. It's when you sit on your horse, I think.
Yes. It's easy to grab the bow when it's inside. But I think if they did like this during centuries, maybe it's because it's the most efficient way. Because if the problem is just to invert the sense and hold the quiver like this, I think it's totally possible. And I guess in Hungary or some countries, it's
not on the other side, but just the string up would be more logical.
Yes, like this with the string.
What do you mean with string up then?
The string on the upper side, not on the lower side of the quiver.
Yeah,
Like this.
Yeah.
So like this.
But on the right side.
No, yes, you have it on the left side.
Oh, you need the arrow quiver on the
right. You grab the bow with your left hand directly here. You grab the arrows and you're ready.
Yeah.
And the bow is already in the right orientation, so you don't have to swivel the bow around.
The string would be for me too exposed if it's on the.
It works easy.
Lower side.
Yes. I did today a video of a Korean bow quiver from this guy. He does an amazing job too. This is such incredible leather crafters out there. This is so hilarious. What they are doing.
I love this kind of craft because they are just jewels. It's very beautiful.
And you see the difference. And when you see then how they make them, you know, how the stitching lines and how everything is. And I was like, how can one do that? You know, this is wow.
I want to do the same.
Yeah, me too, but I will never. I don't touch a piece of leather.
It's not as difficult. I'm not a big fan about it, but I did some, you know, sheath for knives, and so it's not so difficult.
Of course, it's a matter of practice, but when you see the differences, when you buy one of the leather quivers from Bearpaw, you know, they have this rough stitching and whatever, and then you see these ones
from
with
Pakistan.
Stitching lines perfect, and the metal, the oil, is this stuff around it is like hilarious.
It's just wow.
Nice. How much did you pay for the whole set, may I ask?
For the whole set, I think it was a little more than 600 euros.
It's not much money.
No.
It's really a lot of money. Yeah. When you see what you get for it. I mean, I had one of my friends, he makes these Manchu leather quivers, and he always asked me, why don't you sell my quivers in Malta? Said, look, your quiver started $650. And I don't even sell bows for the price here. You know, when I sell a bow for 200 euros, I have a hard time giving someone a quiver for 500 euros for it. Yeah. But it's not going to work.
In medieval reenactments, you can see, for example, the guys who made 15th century with complete armors for tournaments, foot tournaments or horseback tournaments. But sometimes they just have to put 20,000 euros more with the stuff, and after a fight you have to
fix everything.
Of course. It's just broken everywhere.
One argument when some guys said, oh no, an expensive quiver, the quiver is too expensive, or so I always said, look, a quiver you can use your whole life long. Maybe you buy another bow and you break hundreds of arrows, but the quiver will stay with you. So it's not as expensive.
No, but Peter, when you see the quality of these ones,
no problem.
And you
no
get problem. For 600 euros the full set, and another one sells you only the quiver now for 600 euros, but it doesn't last longer. They are so perfect made, they outlive you. You can give this to your...
I totally agree.
So that's why sometimes quality does not have to be so expensive.
No.
Though it depends. Even when you see this Korean guy, the craftsmanship of his Korean quiver he made me, he charges, I think, $200 for this quiver, but it's insanely made. I have no words how perfect these things are. And then $200, you know, when you see before others charge 600 for a, of course, beautiful, nice made with all the metal, whatever decoration, but
this quiver Byron Ferguson is using is from Stephen Katz, is the name of the quiver maker in the United States. The quiver alone costs $600.
Yeah.
Of course, there's some beadwork and some, you know, stuff on. But it's a quiver, simply the quiver for 600 or so dollars. Mm. So I'm not against expensive quivers because I say they last a lifetime.
Yeah,
you may break a bow and an arrow, but the quiver will.
If you have the money, and if I spend now whatever 3,000, 4,000 euros for a bow because I have the money, then I might get a quiver for 500, 600. That's not a problem. You know what I mean? But I don't buy a bow for 200 euros and then a quiver for 600. It does not match my thinking.
Yeah.
It can be said too to have a leather stuff more expensive than your bow and your arrows, for example. But I think it's a part of the costume, of the outfit,
yes,
of the archer. Yeah. And for me, I practice reenactments. Mm-hmm. I did it a lot a few years ago, but less now. But I love it, and it's very interesting. And in France, we have a lot of fair and events like this. And it's a very pleasant to walk in the street like this with your total, your complete outfit, like, and people are just like, "Wow, I have a question about the stuff. Is it a toy?" So, okay, watch my row.
like an Hermes bag.
Mm-hmm. Yes, exactly. Artemis stuff or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But you know, for Oleg, for example, normally there is just this part, this strap, and I have to add this one
to balance it,
adjust the angle
on my belt, and he made this without more charge, just like this, with, you know, the little,
you can adjust,
parts. Oh. Mm-hmm.
With an arrow.
With a bow and a knife.
A little bow. It's just perfect. And he sent me a little bag with, I think, two or three parts like this.
Oh, cool. That's really nice.
Yeah. And if you have a problem, if you lost one, if you want to make another part yourself.
Nice.
You have them.
He's a good guy.
Sort of nice equipment.
Now, the only thing is, you could have get directly in your dress, in your medieval dress, you know, today for the, because we see you almost whole body today, you know.
Maybe. It can be a
next time.
I have an Ottoman stuff. Have Western 14th century outfit and maybe 12th century, 13th century dress.
So did the Western female warriors wore dresses or trousers?
I think it's always the same topic, you know, Peter. But if women fought, I think they wear the same equipment as men, because they didn't have some specific stuff. And if you have an armor, you just have enough room inside to put your breast or something. And I think it was the same stuff. And we have in France a channel, a kind of internet TV channel called Medieval TV. It's not very old, but it's very, very interesting. They have a good kind of topics, and they make videos about a lot of subjects. I had my own videos with archery, Western and Oriental archery. But they had a video about female armors, and it was very interesting, because the girl who presented the video was just like, we just used to see women, warrior women, with a little just a bra, a chainmail bra, you know.
Cape
and
the male fantasy. Yes,
exactly. It's totally identical. But she had a very good discussion about it, and she was just like, "Yes, we have five or six armors from Joan d'Arc, you know." Maybe in the museums, armor of Joan d'Arc. But if you see, you have the signature, the mark of the maker, and it was just 300 years after Joan d'Arc. So it's not her armor, but it's kind of armor with the female part, the only female part on the armor.
Yeah,
and if it's for a female, it's for Joan d'Arc.
I think because you talk about the breast, I think the armor was had also the male armor was had room, had space.
Yes, exactly.
So it's no problem. I like to talk about that subject, but I don't like to get into. But what I also think is, a woman in battle didn't like to get recognized as a woman. So
yes, exactly.
It is crazy if you wear women stuff and gone into battle. That's crazy. Yeah. So yeah. How is your medieval or 14th century outfit is with trousers and a kind of shirt?
Exactly.
Like a Robin Hood, let's say.
On the picture, you always see, you know, for the what the word in English, but we had in the 16th century the legend about les neuf preux for the men and les neuf preuses for the women. And they were drawn like women with a dress, long hair, and just like very feminine long hair. Just this part with armor and the arms. And they were just like with a spear or a sword, and they were the warriors. But it's just for the drawing, and it's not
like that German Valkyries. It's the same. Yeah. Mm-hmm. They were scale armor with breasts and long and skirts and so on. Yeah, mm-hmm. And open long hair. Yeah, yeah. But this is kind of legendary, I think. Mm-hmm. Like female warriors are.
Yeah.
But every legend has a, you know, the core of every legend.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
And it's the same with many male warriors, you know. They were then, of course, propaganda, you know, whatever there was, and then they made him bigger than he was, and
Shortly ago, I saw a nice podcast, lecturing about the Bible and the Old Testament, you know, the Genesis, or how is it called, Pentateuch. Mm-hmm. And they talked about David and Goliath.
Mm-hmm.
And in one older, they followed, they tracked back the oldest writings, you know, the first mm-hmm. in Aramaic and Greek and so on. And in fact, they had just in Greek, this was all written very late. I don't remember the centuries. And their Goliath was just 2 meters and something. And in the next translation, in the next script, he was about 3 meters.
Mm-hmm.
So, like you say, they made the enemy big, mm-hmm. and yourself small, and so it's you're more a hero.
Propaganda.
Yeah.
Like it always is and was.
Yeah.
You know the film Braveheart about Scotland independence. And they were just like about this topic. They were just like when English guys see William Wallace, they say, oh yeah, I've been told that his eyes throw fireballs and he was 3 meters tall and just, no. Because there is a legend, the text, the pictures, and it can be totally imaginary.
It's the same with the number of the enemies. Even the old Egyptians, and so they made up the numbers. And you know, because of big and tall, Prussian King Friedrich II, the Große, Frederick the Great, they call him. He had a special guard. They were at least, I don't remember, 1.80 meters or so, or maybe 85, and had very big heads.
Mm-hmm.
I think also in Napoleonic days they had them.
Yes.
So they were very big guys with this all this stuff. Yeah.
Look at the
in the Xerxes army. You know, in Persian antiquity, the immortals. It was elite guards, but they were not at all immortal, but just called like this. It was just like people in front of them. So they were just if they are immortal, we cannot fight.
It's like terror on the enemy. They get in fear and they kind of paralyzed and so on. Yeah.
Always works. Works now too. Always work.
Of course.
Work with fear and always defeat the enemy without fighting.
I like this very impressive to me were these Polish hussars with these wings on their back.
Yeah,
they have they look great. Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah,
amazing. And if it's like flu, in total speed with their horse,
yeah.
Maybe a lot of sounds. Like you flew a rope. It should be very, very impressive.
Yes, they made the sound.
Imagine a few of them come and you think like they come 5,000 and only 100. You never know.
Like that, I think that this Maasai or Zulu warriors, they were kind of shell chains around their ankles and so on, and when they run it made a sound, so they thought there are 10,000 around.
Tactical warfare,
it's totally tactical.
Or think about the Stuka bombers with their siren. And the people got in horror when they heard this sound.
Like a whistling arrow
whistling arrows.
Like that.
Of course, a foggy morning and you hear, you don't know what and where and who and you freak out.
Very impressive.
But makes sense, you always have to weaken the enemy before you start fighting.
Of course.
Yes, exactly.
And you get him by fear, of course.
Because the goal, since the beginning, the goal is to win the battle without fight too much. The shortest is the battle.
And in the main opinion, people all think about soldiers as monsters. They love to kill or so. That's not true. That's not true. They if they don't have to kill someone and win the battle, they're happy.
Of course.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So next time, Milo, you make your kind of how is it called, haute couture show.
Ottoman outfit, I can do this.
And maybe you'll play us something like,
yes.
I thought with this how is it called, this guitar?
Oud.
And the archery stuff, you're kind of these medieval troubadours, female troubadour.
You can have a chat, just both of you, and I can play the music and sip beer.
Then I need to talk to Peter again. No, thank you. Why do you think we invite people that I don't have to talk to Peter?
We have to organize something in Austria or in Malta or in France, and with a lot of friends and a lot of beer and a lot of tea and a lot of instruments.
Okay.
But it can be really, really interesting.
For sure.
Would be fun. Yeah. Would be fun. Sounds like big fun.
I guess Austria is then better than everybody, and it's a central point.
Great. Okay, so it's okay for me for the third time, for the next time, I can dress with my outfit.
Very cool.
Dress up.
Only Turkish. I can't.
No, it's fine.
I can't.
It's only bad for the people, they let YouTube then run while they drive in their car because they don't watch it. They only listen to us, but they don't watch it. Bad luck for them, sometimes you should watch and use your eyes.
But when I show my all my stuff,
it's nobody sees it.
More interesting to see it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You have to choose. Drive
Exactly. If Mail is on the show, stop driving, take your phone and watch it.
They will do anyway.
When Mail is on the show, of course. Everybody stops everything, and then directly watch.
The world stands still.
Of course. You always can feel directly when I upload it, it makes a little and then the world stopped now rotating.
I have to say, it's very interesting to have those videos on YouTube because you can begin the video when you want, you can stop it, you can see it again, see it twice or third time if you want. It's very interesting because when you had in the ancient times a program on TV, if you were not here at the good moment, it was over.
It was gone, exactly.
So if you think about it, never before in history were so many knowledge stored an output of knowledge, also of bullshit, no question about that. But on the other hand, it's a big trove of information, of if you're interested in old lighters or in old combs or in old in everything, you can find literally everything. And think about 30 years ago, it was unthinkable.
Yeah.
There were maybe on old bows, there were 3 books around the world, or maybe 10, I don't know.
Yeah.
But nowadays you can have information that you can see it in a clip, and you can see someone shoot that old bow or crossbow or gun or something. It's very nice.
Yeah, this is interesting times, that is true.
We're kind of blessed with this internet.
Yes.
It's true.
Blessed and cursed, yeah. It always depends how you use it.
It can be a curse too, yeah.
Yeah, but it depends how you use it. It's like a razor blade. You can shave yourself or you can cut your it always depends how you use
like
it.
It's like archery. It's like...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Archery, let's say the bow and arrow, is one of the very few weapons, or maybe the only weapon, you can't point at yourself. Think about it.
I'd never heard of someone who killed himself with bow and arrow. Yeah, let's say.
Yes, you can do it with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, but that's not bow and arrow. Yeah, yeah. Mm.
Yeah.
But you can kill yourself with a knife, with a spear, with a sword, with everything. But not with not so easy with bow and arrow.
Not so easy, at least. Yeah.
If you're drunk enough, you can you can shoot your feet or.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
Or you shoot up in the air and wait until the arrow comes down.
You run for the arrow. I think every archer has done this stupid thing.
We call it archery roulette. I always say it when I have a group which annoys me. Then, guys, we do now archery roulette. Oh, what's that? What's that? You all gather in a crowd here around me. Yes, and then I shoot one arrow straight up in the air. And the last one who moves is the winner. Of course, we don't do it. Don't do this at home, kids.
But I think you could do it with that.
With the blunt arrow. With this one, we do it.
With that foam arrows.
Yeah, of course, we do this with the foam arrows. But they are slow. And you see them coming.
Do you ever see some totally newbies, people that never hold a bow? You give them a bow and they just like...
Yes,
like,
happens. Some 100 people, at least one.
Logical? Why? They don't want to live in us?
I don't know.
There are some... I think they are simply clumsy and they want to make everything perfect and they put themselves under a lot of stress and pressure when they come there and then they completely... Like you know, you have a speech and you lose your words, and then they—I don't know.
I had some clients, a lot of clients, but I have to say, in most cases, they were women.
I didn't want to say that, but
no, it's not.
It's a fact.
It's a fact. And I showed them how to grasp the string and so, and pull here, and now just release the string.
I can't.
How?
And then they open two fingers, but the middle finger is still on the string. It doesn't go.
It's like this.
Yeah.
You cannot
the whole fist. Yeah, of course.
Yes.
Yeah. But it's normal.
Yes. No. Just the tip.
But I don't know. Yep.
So the best is always when you tell the guys, many guys, more guys than girls, when you tell them, and the middle finger comes to the corner of your mouth. This is your anchor point. And then they stand there with the thumb in the corner. So, is this your middle finger? Yes. Look at it. Oh, it's not my middle finger. How do you drive a car? You know, when you say someone you like what he's doing, do you show this finger or the other one? No, they said, then use this one, you know. It's
maybe they do it because the middle finger is stinky or something.
Yeah, I don't know what they're doing with the middle finger.
Because, you know, even with a not very powerful bow, when you are here, you have the string next to your mouth, your nose, or maybe your eyeglass.
Yes, they are afraid.
They are afraid to shoot them. Yeah,
too much power in my arms, so they are just like this.
You're afraid. Yeah.
Yes.
Happens.
But it can be understandable.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, we understand everything.
And you know, when I have women, they say I can't release, I can't do it. And then I don't know the word exactly in English, but in German that kind of psycho doctors and letting go seminary.
Mm-hmm.
You know, loslassen in German, they say loslassen.
Yeah, yeah, letting go. This is letting what I always say.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And then I say, you know, the next clinic is about letting go. It has nothing to do with archery, but mm-hmm. just mm-hmm. letting go.
Yeah.
Yeah, I tell these girls directly when they stand there and said, oh, so we have problems with letting go things in our life.
Yeah.
How do you know that? Yeah, I see it. Yeah.
You know what, I sometimes if the group is nice and funny,
mm-hmm.
In my quiver I have a very short, you know, whip they use for how is it called, horse jumping.
Mm-hmm.
How is it
yeah
called?
The horse jumping. Yeah.
I don't know,
I don't even know the German word now.
Springreiten.
In Springreiten, jump riding. Yeah,
No.
But no. You know, they jump over these obstacles. Yeah,
and they're very short. They're very short whips. They are as long as my arrows. So I have one of them in my quiver.
You
one of
kinky bastard, you.
Yes, and then I say, and if you don't get it how it works after 1 hour, I will use this one. And always some women say, really? they yeah. would laugh to have it.
Yeah, some, yeah.
Really? Some like
but you wanted to say something, but I was a bit too male. You wanted to say something. And I started talking.
No. It was just remembering, because Peter, you told about, yes, I saw women. But on the other side, I saw many men just like, big man, yeah, in front of the girlfriend
and
the girls.
Yeah.
And they're just like, yes, bow, yeah, I can do it.
Yeah. That's
you are just like, no problem.
yeah.
Absolutely. But
in the shoulders.
Mile, you're right, absolutely. But these are different problems. The mm-hmm. men don't like to get teached. They say, I can do it, you don't have to tell me something. That's the manly part.
Mm-hmm.
And the women have the let go problem sometimes.
Exactly.
And they often feel very insecure and very stressed because they have to do it. But I tell you one thing about girls. I used to make for 3 years in schools in Vienna with boys and girls. Mm-hmm. And it was the same. Like you say, the boys, they didn't listen to me and they didn't hit everything, anything. But the, you know, the weak girls, they listened to me and they showed it and they did it exactly like I showed them. Yeah. And so they outshot the boys because they had less self-confidence or something in shooting. So they wanted to learn it, and so they listened to me and they were better than the boys. That's absolutely true.
But the general problem is that everybody thinks he has a know of how archery works. They come to the range, I know how it works. Did you ever shoot with bow and arrow? No, but I know how it works.
You know why? You know,
they saw the wrong movies.
Yeah, they saw movies. Yeah. They saw pictures and they have it in their brain.
Yeah.
And something I talk about it, I say, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that like this? And they say, I don't know. But they have the pictures in their brain.
Yeah.
They say they saw a statue of an archer leaning backwards. They say, never lean backwards, lean forwards.
Yeah.
And so on. But they have this picture in their brain.
Yeah, but it's interesting. It's only in archery. I never had this when I was teaching Tai Chi or something. You know, they don't come with any precondition and I know everything already. They simply listen and, I follow. In archery,
I think
the guys
because
know.
Archery is more common.
Yeah.
And it's a martial thing. And maybe they just think that as a man, they have to be able to do this
to
and
whatever,
kind of logical and instinctive for them, but not at all. It's just a technique you have to learn. If you give me a compound bow, for example, I don't know how to do.
But I also have to say, men, if they are connected to shooting, gun or rifle shooting or hunters, they easily get it, because they have kind of an idea how shooting works or so.
I had some gun shooters, they even after half an hour, they still aimed over the arrow and shot too high. Look at your target.
Yeah, you're right, but they hit.
Yes.
In most cases, that's true.
This week I did a video, and then the neighbor, he's a tennis coach. He is from Portugal, and he said, "Oh, can you take a photo of me?" I said, "Yeah, then come and take a photo of you." "Yeah, but with bow and arrow." I said, "Yeah, but did you ever shoot bow and arrow?" "No." I said, "Okay, then let me finish my video. I'll show you."
But no,
but in 3 minutes, this guy hit almost around the center and shot groups because he knows his body. Yep. And he saw similarities to tennis. I said, "Look, your left shoulder simply looks, this is like we do in tennis." And then he was a little stiff in the beginning, but he middle finger corner of your mouth. And then I corrected his elbow 2 times. And then his form was 90% there. This is it. So with a guy like this, it's easy to work.
You know what I hate on Facebook? I hate these thousands of pictures of beautiful women with fancy costumes and dresses, and you see in the first glance they never had a bow in their hand before. But I know the trouble, because I did some photo shootings with beautiful models, but they also had no idea. I know how difficult it is to get them into a position you don't recognize that they're.
I was once invited. There was here this show Venere, and they always had some models, and the public could then vote for which model they want to see. And they brought 3 of them, completely styled, really beautiful. And then of course a photographer said, "Oh, the sun is going down. Let's take the photos first, and then we do the video of how they learn to shoot." I said, "No, they first learn how to shoot, and then you can take your photos. Because when I give them now bow and arrow, they stand like this and have no idea what to do with it." And I teach them first. It takes 20 minutes. Give me half an hour. And then I teach them, and then I know how to shoot. And then you take your photos. And then these photos of course, they were not perfect, but
just, it was much better.
You know, they came with high heels and with dresses. And nice. It was nice.
One of the ending words, I like to think that it's very interesting to me in archery and in other stuff to never say, even to yourself, I know this because I practice every day, and I know this, because you have to learn every time.
Yeah.
To me, I have a lot of people who say, "Oh, you play music so well, you know so much things." But to me, I'm just a beginner because I just opened the door of the musical world. Mm-hmm. But it's so huge.
The more you know, you
the
recognize.
Less you know.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And
same
happens to me too. When they always call me like this, listen, I just start shooting some arrows. Don't worry.
And I think they are in some way too. I hate to say it like that, but two kinds of persons, because one gets into fishing, archery, or I don't know, and he gets to a kind of state and he's happy with. And the other breed of man, they like to get more into and more, and they're just curious. "Oh, I don't know everything. I have to know more. I have to study it," and so on. And that's a kind of curse, and a kind of
both is okay, as long as you don't. We mean a bit nerdiness is fine, I guess.
If I do something, I have to know everything about it. When I was into boxing, I studied all the old world champions and the old box fights. I watched, you know, the black and white. I had to have it all.
I'm completely the opposite. different people.
We need all the shames. We need all the people and the techniques and the stuffs and the. At last, it's just archery.
Exactly. We all shoot bow and arrow.
So, guys, I think it's quite late.
Time to go. Oh, yeah. Come on. Oh, yes, it's already. Yes, you are right. It's already 2 hours. Yes.
I think it's good, but we can organize another
thank you
time
so much.
With another tips and with another
trainer. Nice. Another I'm looking
date.
Forward to that one.
Great.
Mile, another date.
No.
Another date. Yes, yes.
Yeah, make Peter happy. Yes.
You can date me like this. No problem.
Fine. So in this case, you accept men. Good.
In this case, yeah.
Or a date like this. Good.
Exactly.
That's fine.
So guys, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you,
Mike. It's really a pleasure to see all your stuff. And of course, it's always a pleasure to listen to you and your knowledge, yeah. Mike. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time. And bye, I see guys. You all. And thank you all for watching, guys, out there. And please subscribe to everyone's channel and check them out. And you know the drill. Thank you very much. Have a good night. See you.